Hello and welcome to the Opening Bell, the Boxing News podcast. My name's Matt Christie, I'm with John Dennan. We'll start off by, as per, we'll talk about some of the results that happened last weekend. Biggest fight, certainly in this country at least, was the...
Derry Matthews, Terry Flanagan?
Or Terry Flanagan, Derry Matthews. Didn't think it was the greatest fight ever, but I enjoyed it. I was up in Liverpool, and I thought that Matthews was as good as he possibly can be. At 32 years old and with a long, old, hard career behind him, I thought he did himself nothing but favours in terms of his legacy. Flanagan, I thought, adapted well to probably a trickier than anticipated assignment and finished really, really strong. All talk now of Crawler, but what did you make of the fight? Did you watch at home or were you in a boozer?
I was watching at home.
Right.
Sober. I agree with you. It was a good fight, not necessarily a thriller, but never dull. And Derry Matthews boxed pretty well. I just thought Terry Flanagan had that bit extra. What was quite interesting is that Derry caught him with some big shots from time to time, and Flanagan took them. Like, he wasn't really hurt badly by them. We know Matthews can punch, so that's a sign that Flanagan can take a good shot. So he's got all the ingredients there to be a very difficult world champion to beat.
I agree with you. There was a body shot, I think, in the second or third round from Flanagan, which really seemed to trouble Matthews for a little while. But I mean, they both stood up to some really, really severe shots. And like you say, Matthews landed one or two that we've seen him knock other people out with, and Flanagan barely moves. They didn't really register as being that noteworthy at the time.
Yeah.
That's a real compliment to Flanagan.
He did stray low a few times, which he hadn't really done in his previous fight, so I'm not quite sure why that was happening.
There was a lot of rule bending and breaking in there. They tumbled to the floor in a heap, which seemed to be initiated by Flanagan really early in the fight. Then he got the point deducted round 7 or 8, and he deserved it. And there was a point where I remember when he got the point deducted, he'd been warned several times. A couple of them seemed to be official, but there was also the referee, Phil Edwards, was kind of just every now and again you could see him having a little word. And he just thought, what if he just turns around and throws him out? Because he could do it. But he seemed to calm down a bit over the last few rounds.
So Flanagan is tough and vicious.
He is. I mean, he's going to be really, like you say, he's really, really hard to beat. He doesn't do anything spectacularly well, but he's got a very, very complete package there, which makes him, I think, one of the best one or two lightweights in the world.
Yeah.
I mean, predictably, because of the offer that was made to Crawler's camp beforehand, predictably the chat quickly turned to that afterwards. From Crawler's point of view, you can see why he's taking his mandatory. He wants to keep hold of his belt. Frank Warren said, well, he doesn't need his belt. Let's just do this fight. That's not that realistic, I don't think. But in the lightweight division, it is the fight that British fans want to see the most. They'd rather see, I think, Flanagan against Crawler than Flanagan even against Linares.
Yeah.
Would you be picking Crawler or Flanagan if they were to come together?
Actually, yeah, that's interesting. I haven't given it that much thought. So my initial instinct is probably Flanagan, though you write Anthony Crawler off your peril. But I think, I think it would be a close fight. Crawler's work rate is excellent, and he's getting better all the time as a world champion. I think Flanagan, not only does he do everything well, I think his speed is kind of one of his outstanding attributes, and that could could shade it for him. And yeah, I know it's the fight that does, that fight does make sense, but I'm not in a, I wouldn't start beating the drum desperate to see it now. I'd like to see it build and build, actually. I think it could, you know, and hopefully become quite big. Because I think Crolla Barroso is a good fight. Barroso is dangerous, but I think Crolla can beat him. And he's a southpaw, nice preparation for Flanagan as well. So it'd be nice to see that become a huge fight.
It hasn't quite reached Brooke Kahn or Frampton Quigg proportions in terms of fans' desire to see it as yet, has it?
Yeah, and I think it needs to be a really big to get past the hurdles of them being with different rival promoters who do not get along, and on different television networks, the two big boxing channels in the country.
Yeah.
Again, those are tough problems to reconcile. You know, you look at how hard it was to make Brooke Kahn, which was a huge fight, and it wasn't like
Frampton Quigg.
Yeah, and Brooke Kahn.
Oh, sorry. You're talking as if it had been made, as if we're sorry.
No, sorry. Yeah, Brooke Kahn's so hard to make that it hasn't even happened.
Yeah.
You know, and it's not like, you know, Kahn has the same kind of ties to Box Nation or, you know, a rival British promoter Frank Warren to Matchroom, you know, and that can't even get made, so.
If not Crolla, well, I think we know it's not going to be Crolla. So who would be the ideal next opponent for Terry Flanagan to keep on going in the direction he's going? I think the only argument in this country now is Crolla. So in order to kind of further his claim to being amongst the world's best, who would be the ideal next opponent for Terry Flanagan?
There's some pretty good lightweights out there. You know, Jorge Linares, I know he's injured, but he's well known because of his excellent fight with Kevin Mitchell. And that would decide who the best lightweight in the world is, so that has an appeal.
You'd give him a good chance against Linares, wouldn't you?
Yeah, definitely. I think Linares would probably be the favourite going in, but it's a fair fight, you know, it could go either way.
Okay, Derry Matthews, I wasn't at the post-fight press conference. It was one of those shows that kind of went on into the early hours. So my job as Boxing News, as the Boxing News reporter for the event was to be at ringside. But I saw footage afterwards of the press conference, and Derry Matthews was kind of really like all over the place emotionally and close to tears at one point, saying he felt like he blew it. I don't think that was the case at all. He is only 32 years old. He's come back from far worse than this.
Yeah.
He made it quite clear in the post-fight press conference that he's won pretty much every title going, but he just wants the world title. He's not going to, it's unlikely, even in this day and age of splintered championships, it's unlikely he's just going to walk from that into another title shot, you'd think, although we can't maybe write that off. Is it going to be difficult for him to kind of start building again?
It's quite hard for boxers who've competed at world level to go back down and retain the same sort of motivation, the same form for lower level fights, but you know, if he keeps active and gets a few more, you know, gets a couple of wins, whether they're easy wins or not, he would probably still be in the frame for a shot, you know, in years to come if he's prepared to wait.
It's a difficult one. I mean, I didn't think that he took, I mean, I thought he gave absolutely everything in there, and I think everybody that was there would agree with that. There wasn't anybody that I heard criticising his performance, and rightly so. But to me, I mean, speaking to him in the build-up to the fight, seeing the shape he was in, and he was convinced he was going to win, as he should have been, that kind of deflation afterwards, when you really are that convinced you're going to do something, and then you find, actually, I wasn't quite good enough.
Yeah.
It's more the mental strain that could put on Derry that I would be concerned about, rather than the physical toil. But we'll see. I mean, if anybody can do it, Derry Matthews can.
He is the comeback king.
But it'd be great to see him. It's great to see him kind of come back and secure another shot. At the same time, if he was to take a couple of months off and say, do you know what, I enjoyed that, but I'm going to retire. I think it'd be a pretty enjoyable retirement party going on, and I think he will. I think already he's going to go down in history as one of, you know, not a British boxing great, but the way he kind of. I mean, you go to Liverpool, and I've been up there for several fights, and you speak to these guys. You speak to people in the pubs. What are you here for? Oh, I'm here for the boxing. Oh, only talk to me if it's about Derry Matthews. It's always about Derry Matthews. So he really has secured his place in history up there. So yeah, just wish him all the best.
And maybe him and Anthony Carollo have unfinished business.
They have got that. I think they have. And I think that both fighters. I know that Matthews said afterwards, right, that was the best. That was the best two lightweights in the country that have just fought there. Carollo's at number three. And if you're kind of going on, if you're going on the two fights that Matthews and Crawler had, you can understand that there is an element of logic to that, in that Matthews won the first fight and the second fight was a draw.
Yeah.
Crawler hasn't got a win over either of them. But the undercard, as we know, was it was supposed to be headed by Guillermo Rigondo. Some visa issues kept him out of the country, unfortunately. We spoke about that last week, didn't we? We did. James Jazza Dickens was still on the bill. He was the immediate bout after. He was immediately following Matthews and Flanagan. Thought he did okay. Thought Paul Butler was impressive. Zelane Tete was impressive. But I didn't really feel... Thought the best fight in the undercard, I don't know if you saw it, was Langford, Tommy Langford against Lewis Taylor. Did you see that one?
No, but I've actually seen quite a lot of both of them when they were... sort of earlier in their career. And I've seen Lewis Taylor in the amateurs as well. And I thought that was going to be a pretty good fight.
It was a good fight. I thought Langford did okay. Lewis Taylor, I thought, was a little bit unfortunate on some of the cards. They were quite wide, but I thought the right man won. But it seemed to me that, because Langford has got a high rating with the WBO, he's enormously flattered by that number four. But he came through a tough fight, you know, and hats off to him. And also on the undercard, Matty Askin, Simon Barclay, which started about midnight or something. And I was expecting that to be more of a competitive fight, and Askin kind of stopped him without much argument in two rounds. Was there anything that you watched on the undercard that you were impressed with, that you remember?
I was actually watching the main event, but just, you know, looking at the results from the undercard. So I was, you know, Barclay's a good fighter, so I think he can come again. I thought Langford, Lewis Taylor was a sort of best matched bout on the undercard.
Yeah.
But it would have been great to see Rigondo on there.
Yeah, it's a shame. Yeah, it's a real shame.
Do you think Langford is on course for an eventual shot at Billy Joe Saunders? Kelly can fight Liam Smith.
Well, he's on course as much as they've got the same promoter, and he didn't lose, he's unbeaten, and he's got a high ranking. I think if they were to make that fight now, I don't know. I mean, okay, here's one for you. If he was going to fight John Ryder, who would you pick?
Tommy Langford, John Ryder. Ooh.
What I'm saying is, I'm not convinced he's even got to John Ryder's level yet. So there's a lot to do. But there's a lot of potential there. But I'm not overly excited about the prospect of Billy Joe Saunders defending against Tommy Langford just yet.
So you're saying it's not quite a substitute for Billy Joe versus Golovkin stadium fight in the summer?
Maybe not a stadium for that fight. I can see how it would have made sense if it was instead of the Bursak fight. I could see how that would make sense.
Yeah.
If he takes on Bursak and then Langford, I would also see why there would be criticism there.
Yeah, well, that would be pretty heavily criticised.
Yeah, but we'll see. We'll see what happens.
You could fight Amir Khan.
Pardon?
Billy Joe can fight Amir Khan. After Khan fights Canelo.
Imagine that. I'm pretty sure that won't happen either.
Don't tread on my dreams, man.
There was some news. There's been quite, in terms of British guys heading towards world title fights, we've had, there's been quite a lot of news recently. Tony Bellew, it's looking like, is going to fight for the WBC cruiserweight title. Looking like June, rumoured to be Goodison Park. What do we make of that? It's another tough fight for him, isn't it? He had the Cleverley fight to start off with, which perhaps was a little early for him. Then he had Adonis Stevenson, who he was not expected to win, not expected to beat. And is it Makubu? Is that how you pronounce it?
I think so, yeah.
Ilunga Makubu, who is, from what I've seen, a real, real terror. He's not doing it the easy way, is he?
No. But then, you know, he wants a world title fight at cruiserweight, so if it's not Makubu, who should it be?
I don't know who it should be. I'm not saying it should be anyone, I'm just saying it's not easy, is it? It's not easy for Bellew, this fight.
Yeah.
And he's a southpaw as well, which he's been known, and he admits that he's not the biggest fan of fighting.
Yeah. Yeah, but these are all problems.
Do you give him a chance? Do you think he's going to be? Surely this is going to be the point where, if it is at Goodison Park, he's a diehard Evertonian. I mean, even if it's in Liverpool, it's just going to be a massive, massive deal for him, isn't it?
Yeah.
Surely this is. You know, we say that Makubu's tough. He is tough, but it's not like that mission to Canada when he took on Adonis Stevenson.
No, exactly. Yeah. I think it's winnable. Bellew's pretty skillful as well, you know, and he can hit hard. And I think with the home crowd behind him and a bit of luck on his side, he can do it. But it's a hard fight. It'll be a pretty good event in an open air stadium. I imagine the atmosphere will be something.
They'd have to stack it though, wouldn't they? They'd have to stack that card, you'd think, to get it at Goodison.
Yeah. But that's possible. There are a lot of good Liverpool fighters about.
Put your promoter hat on, and what would you have as chief support?
David Price, Shannon Briggs.
David Price against Shannon Briggs. That's something else we haven't spoken about yet. Is Shannon Briggs invading England?
I don't even know. What should I think about this, Matt? What's happening?
I don't know. There's a part of me that admires what Shannon Briggs is doing. There's a part of me that worries about him.
Yeah, I do respect his gumption. But is it a case of it's all fun and games until someone gets hurt?
It could well.
I've so often been told throughout my childhood.
The thing is that if this guy was, if Shannon Briggs, who, let's be brutally honest about it, hasn't beaten a rated fighter since 2006. However, he finds himself at number 4 in the WBA rankings, which may make him appealing to the likes of David Haye, for example. It's not like he's just come back and he's got nothing going for him. If you were to win, there's going to be a high ranking there. I was there ringside when he took a horrendous hammering at the hands of Vitali Klitschko, which was 2010. He's 44 years old. But he's come over and he's making a few waves. And even, like, you know, Eddie Hearn, I saw Eddie Hearn tweeted the other day, yeah, I loved watching the videos of Shannon Briggs. I love his energy. Let's talk.
Oh, yeah, I saw on Twitter today that him and Eddie Hearn are meeting.
Yeah, and that's what, I mean, I know that Shannon was going off to meet Eddie Hearn today. Eddie Hearn can see that Shannon Briggs can sell a fight. And I've said it before, something that Shannon Briggs said to me when I first met him in Cardiff, just as the Vitali Klitschko fight had been confirmed, was something along the lines of, I may not be able to win, but you can always guarantee me to sell a fight. Yeah. And it's true. And it's true. And he caused a scene out in Germany before the Vitali Klitschko fight. He was going nuts at the weigh-in. And to the point where, to the level of him going nuts and to the level of him screaming in Vitali's face, that I remember thinking, he's terrified. And that's what, not Vitali, but Shannon Briggs is terrified, yeah. Hence him putting on this over-the-top act. So I'm not sure what's going to happen with it. I'm not sure what Eddie Hearn will have in store for him, but certainly Briggs is looking for a payday.
Could he be a fight for Joshua? That's Eddie Hearn's leading heavyweight. What do you think, like, if that, well, yeah, what would you think of that if it happened?
I wouldn't like that. I think I have got affection for Shannon Briggs. I do.
You've known him for a long time.
Yeah, I've always got on with him and everything else. And
you didn't.
But sorry, go on.
Because he ended up in hospital after the Klitschko
fight.
Yeah,
he ended up in hospital after the Klitschko fight. Yeah, so I went along to the hospital after the Klitschko fight to see him. And yeah, I mean, things like that you don't forget about. You don't forget about the state he was in. And a lot of it, admittedly, you know, his arm, he injured his arm severely in the first two or three rounds. You look back on the fight, you can more or less see the point where it happened. There was no dispute in that, but he took so much punishment there. I wouldn't have these concerns if he had shown anything since he's been back. And he's come back starting in 2014. And I remember speaking to him in 2011, something like that, and him saying, don't think I'm going to come back. Don't think my body can take it. Don't think I want to be hit in the head again.
Yeah.
And then a few years later, he's back. And in all fairness, against the guys he's been up against, he's looked all right. He's been blowing them all away, but there's not one person there that's noteworthy. Perhaps the most noteworthy is that Zumbano Love, who was blown out in a round by Joshua, and Briggs went 12 rounds with him, won every round. But what I'm saying is
Zumbano that if he had just fought everyone. He fought Briggs, Joshua, yeah. Charles Martin, he went a few rounds with.
If Briggs had beaten someone, if Briggs had even beaten a fringe contender this time round, you'd kind of think, okay, well, let's do it. And let's be honest, his pursuit at times of Vladimir Klitschko was hilarious.
When he got him
on the boat, and he was when he was on that what do you call him, paddle boards or whatever, yeah. And he was going after him. That was comedy gold.
Yeah, I mean, it was wrong, but it was funny.
But yeah, I've been, as you said so succinctly at the very, very start of this conversation, yeah, someone could get hurt, and that is
because his body's not going to be. There's only going to be more wear and tear now he's 44 years old. So, you know, could his body stand up to the rigours of a major heavyweight fight?
But would he be a good fight for someone like
David Haye?
Well, Dillon Whyte, maybe?
Maybe.
Something like that?
Dillon Whyte.
Would he get paid? I'm not sure he'd get paid what he wants to be getting paid. I think he's in it for he wants a lot of cash. He wants a...
One last payday.
He wants a handsome payday.
Yeah, so that would mean he would have to fight... If he wants to get Joshua or Fury, as he says he does, then he would have to fight someone just not dangerous until he
just
got
can't.
There. So Dillon would be too, like, you know, Dillon would win, wouldn't he?
You'd pick him to win that. Yeah, the thing is that's always stuck in my mind with Shannon Briggs is that even when he was at his peak, he struggled to beat the top guys. And okay, when he was at his peak, the top guys were people like Lennox Lewis, so there's no... But he was all... He would fight, you know, Franz Botha, he had a draw with, which you would say that Briggs was fortunate to be on the end of that draw. And there was some other guys that he was fighting. Ibragimov, Sultan Ibragimov. Briggs probably tail end of his peak by then. And Ibragimov won pretty much every round. And Briggs really, really struggled. He's got an excuse for every single loss on his record, every single block on his record. But I just struggled to see. I think when you're going into a fight, you're really struggling to make a case for one of them to win, then it's probably a fight that shouldn't be made. And that's kind of what I'm feeling with Shannon Briggs at the moment. Let's talk about something else that happened over the last few weeks, which we said last week we would talk about, we haven't as yet, is the whole Olympic gate, Olympic qualification gate, professionals potentially in Olympics gate. Right, talk us through it, John, Mr. Amateur Expert.
Well, just amateur boxing even exist anymore?
This is the worry, though, isn't it, going forward, if this all happens, be it this year or in 2020?
Yeah, but I suppose, you know, at the top level, at the Olympic level, all the successful boxing countries, they are full-time athletes, they do have full-time Olympic programmes. What's looking like is going to happen. It hasn't been sort of confirmed yet, but the president of IEBA, that's the governing body for Olympic boxing, has basically said he wants this to happen. He said it to us in an interview a couple of weeks ago. What they want to do is allow national federations to be able to select pro boxers if they want to. That hasn't been confirmed yet, and it's looking like they're going to call an extraordinary congress to discuss it in June, possibly. I assume it would have to be early June. By then, there are Olympic qualification tournaments going on at the moment. There's one happening in Argentina right now for the Americas. The European one starts on the 7th of April, so we're already quite far into the Olympic qualification process. And then there's this curveball we could see professional boxers or traditional professional boxers being chosen for their country. So in theory, Ukraine could select Lomachenko again, if everyone wanted to. But I suppose the flip side is, let's take Lomachenko as an example, he'll have an agreement with his professional manager and promoter, Top Rank, and TV network that's been showing him, HBO. So I think it'll be very difficult for top pros to suddenly drop everything and become Olympic boxers once again. And that's not to mention how difficult it would be to go from boxing 12 round fights where you weigh in the day before to going back to doing three round bouts that are a lot faster day after day for a couple of weeks, weighing in every morning of every morning competition throughout those 2 weeks.
Why is this a good idea? Why could this be a good idea? Or rather, why is it being put forward as a potential game changer?
I think the basic argument and theory is the IOC think the Olympic Games should be the highest level of competition for those sports, so they think the best athletes in those sports should be at the Olympic Games. So that's why you have, you know, Federer and Andy Murray entering tennis at the Olympics. If they're saying the Olympics is the highest level of competition, then theoretically the best boxers should be allowed to enter them. But then whether the best championship 12 round fighters or the best tournament boxers are another question as well.
It's surely, you've just kind of summed it up there, but it's unlikely, isn't it, that this will happen this year, would you say?
I think the new rule will come into effect. I'm not sure,
Sorry, I meant it's unlikely that we'll see a professional fighter at the Olympics this year.
Exactly, I'm not sure what top name would do it, in the you know, Klitschko in the past has said he's interested, but has recently said he's focused on the Fury rematch.
Understandably, yeah.
You know, Golovkin has said time and again he wants to win all of the world titles, professional world titles, so he's kind of otherwise engaged. And also, they earn a lot of money for those professional fights. You know, it's not like, you know, it's not like the GB program has a spare 8 million quid to throw at Amir Khan to try and get him involved, even if they wanted to. Kazakhstan maybe does have a lot of money to throw at their Olympic program, but even then, they're like Golovkin's commitments. You know, maybe someone like Pacquiao, who the prestige of being in the Olympics, he's running for the Senate, or maybe he'll have been elected by then. Maybe that would help him politically. So maybe boxers who are winding down their career, it would sort of appeal to them to sort of have a final swan song at the Olympic Games. But if you're not a top level guy, they're going to have to go through the qualification process. So I find it pretty hard to imagine Pacquiao going out to a tournament in Bulgaria to qualify. And, you know, but God knows where, you know, would he do that for free? Would anyone be able to pay him enough to make it worth his while? So if you're not a top level guy, I don't see how you're going to be good enough to qualify. Because let's face it, Olympic boxers, you know, not from every country, but from the major countries, they're very, very good. Like the Cubans, you know, they are serious. They are serious, sort of essentially professional athletes, professional boxers, as in professional Olympic boxers. But their team has been around for a couple of cycles. Yeah. They're really, really good. The Russians, I know, like Baturbi have turned over the last games, and Mikontsev, so some good guys have gone pro. But Russians have a lot of good fighters who are good, dangerous fighters who have been around for a long time as well. So, you know, and all the Kazakhs are pretty fearsome as well by their current Olympic team. So I know you call them professional and amateur boxers, but it's not like your average professional boxer is going to be able to waltz into an Olympic qualification event and, you know, beat these guys.
Another concern is okay, then say if they can somehow tempt Pacquiao to do this, say if he can go through a qualification tournament, say he does all that, is it not a little, it'd be something of a farce if Manny Pacquiao was the only professional fighter in there, would it not?
It would be pretty weird, yeah. And it would be, I imagine if you've gone through, you've stayed amateur, you've pursued your Olympic dream for the last 4 years, you finally qualified at some ghastly difficult tournament in Azerbaijan, and then just like, oh, I'm drawing as Manny Pacquiao in the first round. And it is, you know, it is a 10-9 scoring system now, not the computer skits system we had at the last Olympics. So it is like, you know, and I do think, you know, everyone tries to say how fair and balanced judging is, but reputation does count for a lot. So it's like if you're going in with Manny Pacquiao, he's like, because he's got the name, he's going to be like one round up in the, you know, in everyone's minds, and he's not going to have to do much. He's just going to have to sort of throw some punches nearby you to probably get around. I'm just speculating. It would be pretty tough.
Have they opened a massive can of worms with this? Have they not? Because for this to be viable, for this to be credible, it just need. You know so much more about this than I do, but it just seems like it hasn't really all been thought out, the logistics of it and everything else.
Yeah, I suppose the things they've done, if they've said you have to qualify, which I kind of thought they might create some wildcard places or something.
But do you think that will be, sorry to interrupt you, do you think that will just be for kind of something to say in case it happens this year? Is that going to be what's going to happen? Every year they're going to have to qualify? Because, mind you, I suppose in every sport in the Olympics it's not every sport, is it? There's not all, like, people, the tennis, they don't qualify, do they? I know the athletics have to qualify.
Yeah. Yeah, and I know, you know, I sort of qualification standard varies from sport to sport. Like in boxing, it's really hard, and with other sports, it's, you know, it doesn't have the same system. But what they've also done is, IEBA, the governing body, have basically said this can happen, but they're passing it on to the national federations, so it's up to GB or the Kazakh team or America to select who they want to select. So, say in the case of GB already has a selection policy established that will be based on, you know, various factors, including tournament performances and that kind of stuff. So they'd have to rewrite their own selection policy if they even wanted to select someone. And then they might think, you know, we've been working with these guys for the last 4 years. We think they're the best tournament boxers in the country. So, you know, I find it pretty hard to imagine Tyson Fury. So he might say, right, I want to be in the Olympics. But is he going to go join the GB squad and train with them, you know, 4 days a week?
How likely would it be to say in 4 or 8 years to be a situation where the Olympics are just a part of the boxing calendar, like it is the tennis calendar, and the best professional boxers will go off and compete in Olympic boxing, like we don't know at the moment. How likely is that? Or will there always be the classical Olympic boxing as we've known it, in terms of it's the springboard, isn't it? It's that last springboard into professional boxing.
Yeah. I think, I'm not sure, you know, even if the rule comes into effect, well, if and when the rule comes into effect before this Olympics, I don't think it'll have a huge impact on 2016. The type of boxers we see in 2020 could be very different, so it could change things a lot. And I do hope they actually change the qualification process for the next Olympics, because it's so complex and hard, and I'm not convinced you'll get the best tournament boxers qualifying through the system as it is. But I also don't think, you know, it's not like every country is going to dissolve its Olympic program. I think you need an elite program to succeed at the games, and therefore, and to join those programs, you do sign contracts and that kind of thing. So it's going to be quite hard for that to mesh with the current system in professional boxing. But there are sports where it sort of seems to happen. You know, no one seems to have a problem with Bradley Wiggins going to cycle for Team Sky in the Tour de France, but also being part of the Olympic program. So I think, so theoretically, you know, could we see the next generation of Olympians, you know, fight pro for a bit and come back to the program? In theory, yes. And in theory, it could benefit Britain and America, who have, you know, those are countries with much, sorry, it could benefit their Olympic teams, because those are countries that have much more developed, you know, professional sports than they do in, you know, Kazakhstan or Russia, where most of them stay with the Olympics. So it could, in theory, be good for, you know, the GB team. Whether that would pan out, if you're a promoter, you're gonna want to hold on to your boxer the same way the GB program now doesn't want to lose its boxers to professional boxing. So yeah, we might see a different type of conflict, and with certain athletes, we might see some sort of, or certain boxers might see some flitting between the two. But
so what you're saying is that this could be, if handled correctly and planned correctly, this could be a positive move for boxing?
Well, maybe I'm saying not that much. There might be a lot of noise and not that much change, because I think if you're gonna succeed at the Olympics, you've essentially got to focus on boxing three rounders day after day, and I think that's a different type of event to trying to developing into a 12 round championship boxer. And some boxers might be better suited for three rounders than they are for 12 rounders. That's, I think, the most puzzling thing is, you know, you don't see a 1500 meter runner, you know, doing the 1500 meters and then sometimes doing the 400 meters or qualifying doing the 1500 meters, but competing doing the 400. So I think they are different types of event, and I think if you're going to be most effective, you're going to have to specialize in one of them. I believe, let's say rugby sevens is going into the Olympics, I believe rugby players, maybe, I'm not quite sure whether they do it on like, would be doing it on a 4-year cycle, like, you know, they might even be doing it like 2 years out, but I think they have to choose between playing 15-a-side, where all the sort of big events are, or specialising as a sevens player. So maybe boxers will have to choose between whether they're going to specialise in sort of tournaments or specialise for the Olympics.
Will we see, last question on this, and then we better go. Will we see a professional boxer in the 2016 Olympics?
I have a feeling there'll be someone.
Really?
But I just don't know who.
It would have to be, if it was going to be someone, it would have to be a big someone, wouldn't it?
Yeah. But yeah, but I don't know who. I just have a feeling
there'll be
someone, yeah. Because there must be, you know, there must be some interest from pros in doing this. It could, you know, there's got to be someone who's going to do it, right?
You'd think so, right? Yeah. Well,
yeah, no, I wasn't saying this is like, the thing is, I quite liked how everything was for the last Olympics. I quite liked that. So I'm not saying this is great.
You just loved being at the Olympics.
Yeah.
You loved it.
Yeah, I did. I didn't have a problem with them having head guards. I was one of the few people who was quite happy with computers, not happy with computer scoring, but I wasn't delighted to see it all change. But yeah, it is basically, the upcoming Olympics is going to be very different from London 2012, and I think there will be, you know, some big changes between 2016 and 2020. But, you know, I don't even know what's going on anymore.
No.
I'm an old man in a young man's face.
Roger. Okay, listen, I'm going to have to call it a day. It was good though, I enjoyed that. I hope everybody else did as well. We'll obviously keep on top of all the developments going into the Olympics as best we can. In the meantime, thanks everybody for listening and your continued support. Please do have a look at the magazine if you haven't for a while. Yet again, this week's issue is packed full of goodies for good old boxing fans like yourselves. And we'll be back, fingers crossed, or we might not be next week. Probably be the week after next, when it's Easter next week.
We're eating chocolate eggs.
We're going nuts. Okay, but thanks everybody, and we'll be back in 2 weeks' time.